Welcome to Your Family Dog, a podcast dedicated to helping families love living with dogs. Here are your hosts, Julie Fudge-Smith and Colleen Pilar.
Hi, welcome back. Now, I was on a recent business trip and sitting in the hotel room, picking up the TV remote, and I just started flicking through the channels. And as I was going through, I came across a dog training show. And immediately, without even thinking, I clicked to another channel, any channel, get me away from this. And I think that's something that a lot of people would be surprised to hear. But I do not want to watch TV dog training in most cases. So have you had that experience too, Julie?
Oh, absolutely. I do not watch TV dog training. And in fact, one time, this is a couple of years ago when I was out west with my sister, we were going on a little ski vacation and we drove through some small town in Eastern Washington and we stopped for lunch. And the only place that was open at the time was a sports bar. So we go in and I look up at the TV and there's Cesar Millan. And he's got this poor little dog who's terrified of men. And so what he does is he goes over and he's especially terrified of men if they get anywhere near his owner, who's this sweet little woman. So what does Cesar do? But he has the woman sit on the couch with the dog. And then he sits down next to her and puts his arm around her. Now, the dog is quaking at this point. And he says, okay, now you need to flip the dog over and stroke his belly. About lost it. I said, no, you don't. No, you don't. That's not what you do at all. I said, stop it. Stop it. My sister's leaving. I said, he's, that dog is so scared. This is just not what you do. I'm standing in the bar screaming at the TV. And my sister's like, and luckily it wasn't very crowded. There's only a couple people that looked at me. And my sister says, you know, Julie, it's okay. I get it. I said, no, it's not okay. He's going to damage that dog for good. She's never going to get over being at the, that's not what you do. And she says, Julie, you're preaching to the choir. And I'm like, yeah, but oh, it was awful. I could. And there was no place else to have lunch. I'm like, we have to sit as far away as possible from this TV because otherwise you're just going to hear me all lunch going, no, no, you can't do that. So, yeah, it's traumatizing for me to watch.
It really can be because it's one of those cases where it sounds to someone who doesn't really understand behavior or emotion like that's a good strategy. Like, mm-hmm. So we are pairing the scary guy with the, you know, belly rubs and stroking. Of course, that's a good strategy. And yet, no, not when we're at that level of fear and quaking and just making you deal with it. And right. That is,
and
honestly,
this poor dog, yeah, was just frozen with fear. It was just quaking. And to flip it over on the woman's lap and hold it down, that's a modified alpha role. So, I mean, all they're doing is adding and adding and adding to this poor dog's angst. And I didn't see a single treat in the whole place. And that just also bothered me. Just this manipulation, physical manipulation of this poor little dog, forcing it, flooding it with what scared it more than anything else, and giving it nothing as any kind of counteraction to this terrible thing it was going through. No food, no treats, no nothing.
So, right. And then the lack of behavior is now being counted as successful retraining.
Yes,
so
yes.
The dog just kind of shuts down and goes, really bad things are happening. And then people go, yay, look better.
Yeah,
because the dog is not growling or anything.
There's a big difference between no behavior is not good behavior, which we have discussed before.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also a huge difference between calm and shut down. And
right.
Lily Chin, who we've talked about before, has a wonderful, wonderful poster on the difference between calm and shutdown. And we can certainly have that on the website. And it's one that I now routinely include in my packets to my clients when we talk about stress signals. I give them lots of Lily Chin handouts, but I love that one because it really points out the difference between a dog who is, hi, I'm kind of calm and like to see you, and hunkered down and terrified and frozen.
Right.
And it's not the same thing. And in fact, that when I first discovered that, it was with an article associated with Cesar Millan about his treatment of this Boston Terrier and pigs. And it was horrific. the story, the basic thrust of the story is there's a little Boston Terrier who attacks pigs. Brave little Boston Terrier to go after a pig, if you ask me. But anyway, so this, in order to counter this Boston Terrier's pig attacking, what Cesar Millan does is has a pen with pigs in it, puts the Boston Terrier in there, and lets it have free rein attacking pigs, and even has one person holding a pig while the dog latches on. I can't even talk about this without getting close to tears, with this dog latching on to this poor pig. It does nothing to curb. It overwhelms this dog as the pigs squeal and flee, and it overwhelms the dogs. It's brutal to the pigs, and it does nothing to change this dog's behavior. And it was just horrific, absolutely horrific. I watched the video, at least I think I watched the whole thing, and I seriously, I thought I was either going to pass out or vomit from watching this thing.
And I saw that one too. It affected me the same way. It was really traumatic and so upsetting, because first off, we were kind of letting the Boston rehearse this behavior, which is really inappropriate. And secondly, it's not like he was attacking fire hydrants. He's attacking living sentient beings. And oh yeah, we're really going to let that happen while we work on this. No, the pigs did not volunteer for this duty. So as you can tell, Julie and I get a little bit riled up about this stuff because it's really, really hard.
And it's so cruel. It was so cruel to those pigs. Mm-hmm. And it was cruel to that Boston Terrier. I mean, mm-hmm. the whole thing was just horrific. And as a result of that, Lily Chin actually, that's where I saw that poster, because she was talking about the difference between calm and shutdown. And then as a result of that, the American Society of Veterinary Animal Behaviorists had put out a position paper on Cesar Millan because of that very episode. And I know that some of the preeminent positive reinforcement trainers have sat down and talked with him. And he's just not, my understanding, I could be wrong, but my understanding is he's really not particularly interested in talking to us or thinking about different ways of training other than using his sort of dominance force-based methods.
Well, here's the advantage of dominance force-based methods. They work really well when a trainer comes in and does it and has a limited relationship with the animal, because the trainer can be very, very consistent and the animal learns don't mess around when that person's here. And right. I'll tell you that when I first started dog training, I was taught and I used choke chain corrections and mm-hmm. things like that. And the dogs were always really good for me and they were not so good for their families. And initially I thought it was because the families were doing a poor job. But the more I learned, the more I saw was that the mere presence of me meant you might get a correction. So it was easier right. to just behave because she might give you a correction. And I had such limited interactions with the dog that I could be really clear. This is good. This is not good. And it was an unrealistic view of behavior. And I think frequently that's the problem with any sort of TV or internet video-based training mm-hmm. techniques or shows, is that we see through a filter. We see, you know, sort of through the director's eye, because we have this limited exposure to what's correct. Really happening. Pat Miller, who's a really good dog trainer, once said that watching good behavior mod is more boring than watching grass grow. Like, if it's really being done right, it's so boring. But it's being all within the dog's ability and comfort level. And so that's effective. It's not great TV, but it's really not. Good training.
And one of the problems with it is it tends to take a little bit of time, because if you rush it and you push the dog too mm-hmm. fast, what you do is you end up having to go back several paces. So you've got to take your time. You've got to be consistent. You have to understand that you're trying not to expose the dog to the stimuli that causes this reaction. So there's a lot of management. There's a lot of time and patience involved. And what's unfortunate is that people see things like the TV, and even some of the good trainers on TV, you know, they don't show the whole process. It's kind of like the cooking show, right. you know, you know, I go and I'm like, holy cow, how in the world did Bobby Flay make those cupcakes in the half hour show? Because when you read the recipe, it's 6 hours to make the cupcakes and uses every single appliance in my kitchen, right? Mm-hmm. And I think it's the same way with behavior modification or showing to turn a behavior. Is that we're not going to show you all the gritty details. We're going to show you a little bit about how we do it. We're going to show you a little bit of the progress, and we're going to show you the end result. And everybody thinks I can do this in a half hour, and you can't. And I think it really hurts those of us who do behavior modification in that way, because I get clients, and I don't know if this has happened to you, but it certainly has happened to me. Things weren't moving fast enough for the client. So they started looking elsewhere, and they would go to a place down the road from me who uses traditional methods because they thought they promised instantaneous results. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, you know, it's your dog and your choice. But there are consequences to suppressing behavior like that.
Yeah.
Because you're not changing the underlying emotional response of the dog to that particular stimuli that causes it to have this reaction. You are not actually giving the dog an alternative behavior to do, right? And you're not counter-conditioning to the stimuli in order for it to become less of a stimuli. You are never going to change it completely, but you can certainly lessen the dog's response to it. That kind of stuff all takes time. And any kind of force-based methods that says, okay, when you see another dog, I'm going to jerk you in the collar so you sit and behave and you don't do anything, doesn't change the dog's fear or joy or whatever it is, its reactivity to the other dog. So
yeah.
What's going to happen when you suppress that behavior? It's going to come out. And it's probably going to come out a lot more than what it was when it went in. At least that's been my experience.
And I think it's a tricky piece because, I mean, we all want the quick fix. I mean, think of every internet ad, you know, 5 easy strategies to lose weight, sell your home in 6 days, you know, have a clean house, make grocery shopping easier, whatever. Just we're looking for ways to make our lives easier and simpler and faster and with less of the hard stuff, the muddling through of the hard stuff of real life. And what we learn every single time we try any of these 5-step easy methods is, oh yeah, there's a lot of muddling through and the hard stuff of life. And a big piece of that is managing our environment so mm-hmm. that the hard stuff isn't as hard as it could be. And so it's an interesting piece because from the shows I've watched, and I have watched, but I try really hard not to, and I should not be allowed to watch them alone because I need someone to talk me down or change the channel if I'm refusing.
That's right. Thank you for my sister.
Yeah. Yeah, I should also not be allowed to watch YouTube alone. I mean, there are certain things that I should not be allowed to do alone. YouTube, America's Funniest Home Videos, dog training shows. Or actually even movies about dogs, because I'll frequently have an opinion about that too. So
you
I need to have good
opinion,
counseling.
Holly?
I know. Shocking. I have an opinion. But what I've seen missing in some of these shows is the real focus on relationship, commitment, and management. Like, this
Absolutely.
Is going to take time. We're going to set things up so that it's as easy as it possibly can be for you and for your dog. So we have limited exposure and limited opportunities to practice, and that you can be rewarding pretty successful stuff that is not the whole package. And then bit by bit, we're going to move toward the goal. And that just sounds terrible and draining and awful, and yet it's really magical. If you can control an environment, you can solve so many issues.
Yes. In fact, I have a client that I've been working with well over a year, and I just had another follow-up with her, and I've been working with her, and she is working with one of the behaviorists at OSU, and so we have a lot of this three-way emailing. And I mm-hmm. saw her for the first time in several months because they were tweaking Ivy's meds and trying to get that fixed. And we finally decided she was probably capable of going to a Rowdy Rovers class. And when I saw her a couple weeks ago, I was so impressed with where Ivy had come from in a year. Yes. Mm-hmm. Ivy still has bad days. And we talked about ways that we can, like, she had her out for a really long walk with her other dog, Etta, and her husband. And it was at the end of this really long, very successful walk that Ivy lost it. And I said, I'm not surprised. You had a really long, very calm, but, you know, fun walk. She was probably tired. And that was the one trigger. These kids they were just being kids. They just shrieked and screamed about something right near Ivy, and it set her off. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the owner was like, oh, man. I said, no, this is great. The fact is you got an hour-long walk, for one. And the fact is you were able to redirect, get Ivy back to you, get her calmed down. Yeah, we've got some more work to do, but she's come so far, and it's been a year, full year.
And that piece about being able to, so Ivy lost it, but the owner was able to redirect and get her calmed back down, is something that people miss sometimes too, because mm-hmm. a year ago, you couldn't get her to redirect and you right. couldn't get her to calm back down. Like, her brain fell out of her body and there was no reaching Ivy. And then after time, what happens is she loses it. And then she goes, oh, wait, whoops, I lost it. Let me pull it back together here and focus on you. And I think people really need to be commended for that whenever they have trained enough that, yep, your dog lost it. But look how fast they were able to pull it back together. And that is training. That's about the owner. That's about their reinforcement history and the things that they've been doing right and the fact that they are consistently there for their dog. And I love that.
And that's exactly what I said to her, and that's exactly what the behaviorist at OSU said, the same thing. I let the behaviorist deal with the meds. I mean, that's her expertise, not mine.
Right.
But, you know, we even talked about the fact that Ivy's at the point where she can start taking treats from strangers, which is a huge thing.
That's huge.
Mm-hmm. But it's under very controlled. But I said, look, I need to have this under very controlled circumstances. It has to always be Ivy soliciting attention from the stranger. It's not the stranger coming up to Ivy and offering a treat, because you have the problem with the person who's like, oh, every dog likes me. And I'm like, my mm-hmm. dog did not get that memo. So it always has to be Ivy gets to choose who gives her a treat. That's the bottom line rule. But if Ivy does go up and solicits attention and talks to that person, then absolutely that person can give a treat. But if you have the absolute rule, strangers don't get Ivy a treat, and you make exceptions, then you're going to actually protect Ivy from those pushy people mm-hmm. that come in. So, you know, that's huge. And if you're like, what's so big? That's huge for a dog that is people reactive. And the fact when I came to the door and I hadn't seen her in several months, yes, she barked, but she didn't leave the room. She didn't move away as I stepped towards her. I fed her sister a couple of treats and she's like, huh, what's going on over there?
So and if then, we were to make a TV show about your work with Ivy, do you think we could wrap that all up in 26 minutes plus commercials and you know, really convey the amount of work and effort that this family has put into their dog in a encouraging, supportive, and scientifically accurate way?
No, I really don't. Not unless we have in big, bold headlines, 6 weeks later, you know, 4 months later, you know. And the fact is she went to the Rowdy's Rovers class and it didn't work well. So she bought, I think it was six. So she's done two. But then she said, no, this is not right for Ivy. Not yet. Mm-hmm. So she backed out of the class. We did some other stuff. And we're eventually going to go back and try it again. And it's with a group that I have a great deal of respect for. And they're really good about saying, okay, yeah, Ivy can't do it right now. And so she's still got her last four classes. And they will work with her. And they're just a really wonderful group in Columbus. But the other thing is there are setbacks. And, you know, that's not what they show, you know, except the only thing I find very amusing is I don't know how many times, I mean, you've been training longer than I have. I've been training about 14, 15 years, somewhere in there. And I've been bitten twice in that time. Cesar Millan is bitten twice an episode.
I know. It's crazy.
You know, and I mean, serious bites. But you think maybe he might take a step back and go, I just got another bite. And how many ones do they take that they not put on the film, right? If they're mm-hmm. showing him actually being bitten, right? and some of the ways in which these dogs react to him, and that's what goes on film. What's happening that's not on film? That's what I want to know. How many serious bites does this man have to get before he begins to think, maybe there's a better way? Maybe I should not be bitten pretty much every episode.
Well, and I think that that comes across as confident, and I'm not afraid of you, and, you know, bring on your worst. I can take it. And that is exactly the wrong attitude for a teacher to go into for modifying behavior. Because if we think about modifying behavior, your own behavior, you know, so anything that you want to change, if your teacher says, I'm going to knock the crap out of you, if you do that, you'll probably be pretty good in that teacher's presence. But yeah, you will, A, hate the teacher, probably not actually really change the behavior in a healthy way. And it's creating this whole anxiety piece for you. So if we're looking at, I've been bitten very few times, and thank goodness have never been bitten to the extent that I needed any medical attention. So
no,
yay.
No have I. No have I, yes.
But I think a lot of that is me saying, oh, you're uncomfortable. Let's see what I can do to make that better for you. Now, I know excellent trainers who have been bitten. I am not fooling myself. I've been lucky many times where I thought we were doing well, and then, oh, whoo, yeah, there, that happened. But it either was a very minor bite or it wasn't a bite. It was just a big warning that I was like, ooh, that was a little faster than you were ready to move with this progress. But so I'm not saying that a dog trainer will never be bitten, but I'm saying that anyone who uses their number of times they've been bitten as a badge of honor doesn't understand dog behavior. So I've been bitten 10 times means to me you're really bad at reading dogs.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And the first bite I got happened when I was a beginning trainer, and it was at the first All About Dogs area, and I was moving along with a German Shepherd, and another dog came by the other way. It was a narrow hallway, and the German Shepherd went and couldn't get the other dog. Instead, bit me in the knee, and that was redirected aggression. It wasn't anything that I had done. I just was in the wrong place at the wrong time. But I also learned, hold on a second here. Let's not try and pass in that corridor. That's an uncomfortable place for dogs to pass. Some dogs will come in, and then the dogs will go out. So, you know, it was a learning experience for me, and how can I better manage dogs so that they're not put in a position where they're uncomfortable?
Right.
And that's one of the things that I can't believe. I remember watching one episode where season one, have you seen when he does that little kick thing behind him? And, you know, like the dog's not behaving, so he does this. He kicks takes, if the dog's by his left side, he'll take his right foot and kick the dog from behind. And I'm like, you don't think that that's an irritant to the dog? You don't think that that might just actually provoke the dog? And in fact, the one I was watching, the dog turned and bit him in the leg. And I'm like, I would have bit you in the leg. If I had been standing there and you kept hitting me in the leg, I would have probably gone, stop it. You know?
Yeah.
And the dog did it too, and he didn't stop it. And when the dog, I think, growled or bared his teeth, he kicked him again. And it's like, it's just a lack of understanding. But I think it comes from a lack of understanding because there's a fundamental difference in the way in which he views dogs than the way in which you and I view dogs.
Yes.
And he views it from the dominance alpha point of view, which does not really allow for you to read dog language in a sympathetic way.
Yes.
I think if you read dog body language, you're reading it as always in terms of you're trying to dominate me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to let you do that. And which is always amazing to me because I didn't really think dominance could go across species.
Well, and it's interesting, too. I was talking to Patricia McConnell, and one thing that we thought was particularly fascinating was we talk about dogs like man's best friend, loyal, compassionate, caring. And then if there are any behavior issues at all, we talk about them like connivers, like they're trying to take over, they're, you know, they're just out for their own gain. And what is that? What is it in us that is so, you know, we got to show them who's boss. What are you talking about? People get dogs for all those warm, fuzzy reasons. You know, I want someone to love. I enjoy spending time with the dog. But then as soon as there's a problem, it's like, you know, he peed on the floor because he's mad that I work. Or that he might be stressed, possibly. That might be a okay, mad. Oh, okay.
Or maybe he was inside too long.
Yeah.
He needed to go.
Yeah.
You know, he couldn't. You know, let's do, as people would call it, Occam's razor. What's the simplest explanation for any given behavior? Personally, I like Aristotle's principle of parsimony because he's the one who originated it and Occam stole it from him. But, you know, that's a matter of semantics. Anyway, being an Aristotelian at heart and not an Occam fan, I tend to default to Aristotle. But be that as it may, the idea that, why are we coming up with some convoluted explanation for all this when there's a pretty simple one? Like, yeah. I needed to pee, and there was no one to let me out, and the carpeting is nice and soft, and it's absorbent, and it doesn't pool at my feet. And yes, I'm kind of stressed that nobody's here to help me. And that's a much more realistic, I think, assessment of the situation. The other thing that allows for is some compassion for this dog. You know, if you are constantly seeing your dog as this sort of conniving individual, I've talked to a client the other day, she goes, I think he did it to spite me. And I said, you know, I said, dogs are many things, but vengeful is really not one of them. And I don't think he's saying, okay, hold on, I'm going to hold all my pee and I'm not going to chew on anything until she leaves, and then I'm going to get her. I'm going to ruin that brand new carpeting. And it's like, I really don't think that dogs are thinking in that way at all. And I think when you kind of point it out that way, most people go, yeah, probably not. And then if they see it as a problem rather than a behavioral vendetta, right? Then there's room for improvement and compassion and some training and some ways in which we can make this dog more comfortable so that we don't have to keep calling the carpet cleaner.
So I guess our advice to people would be, if you choose to watch dog training shows, think about that. Think about, how are we describing the behavior? Are we putting motives to it that don't need to be there? And what kind of training methods are being used? Are they ones that you'd be comfortable with for your own dog? Are they ones you would be comfortable doing with your own dog? And do you think that this problem was realistically solved in the way it's being presented on TV? Or do you think there was a lot of additional work being done? So when it's taking you weeks and weeks and weeks to really change something, do you know that's totally normal and fair and fine?
Right. I think that's a really good point. And the other thing is educate yourself a little bit about dog body language.
Yes.
Because when you're watching these things, you're going to be able to assess whether or not this is actually working if you know something about dog body language. That was what had done me in on that poor little Chihuahua mix, is I'd like, they're not reading this dog. I mean, he is totally stressed. And so there's a lot of good things on dog body language. Certainly I've written about it, and I know you've written about it, and you've got some wonderful stuff on your website, and I've got some blogs. So, and we talked about it, I think, ad nauseum.
We do.
Pretty much.
Talk about body language a lot.
So,
but one really good tip for watching dog body language on video is to turn the sound off. And to watch what's happening and to really think about what's happening without a narrator telling you how to interpret the situation. And then see, because often you're thinking, oh, that's probably a good warning sign for you. Your gut knows.
I think that that's a really terrific way. The idea of turning the sound off, so nobody else is narrating it, to, you know, watching your gut, paying attention to how you react to it, is a really, really good way to take a look at it. And the other thing you might find too is that as you watch more of these things and as you turn the sound off and watch, you realize how many common stress signals people and dogs share. you know, look, yeah, there's a lot of lip licking and looking away and turning away and moving and fussing and fidgeting and all the kinds of things that people do, dogs do too, which is one of the reasons why I think we are so good together, because we dogs read mm-hmm. us really well. We don't read them as well, but we can learn to read them well. So, you know, just think about, if you're uncomfortable watching this, that's probably a pretty good sign the dog's uncomfortable
yeah.
too. So, okay, well, I think that wraps it up. I think that's good advice on how to watch dog training programs, but don't expect Colleen and I to watch them with you. Because
we will provide a narration of our own. Even if that's we're in right. a bar
Which
somewhere, watch out. Everyone will hear the narration.
That's right. Okay, well, great. Well, we will see you all next time. One thing I would ask is that if you enjoy this program, if you enjoy listening to Colleen and us, if you could leave us a review on, what is it, iTunes?
Apple Podcasts. But we're on all of them, but the reviews on Apple Podcasts seem to have the most impact on helping new listeners find shows that they may enjoy. So we're on Stitcher and Google Play and all the other streaming places, and we love reviews from anywhere. But reviews on Apple Podcasts really do help new listeners find programs that they'll enjoy. So if there's anything here that you enjoy and would think others would find useful, we would appreciate you telling them directly, but also putting up a review so that people you don't know can find out too.
Thanks for listening to Your Family Dog. Got questions? Interesting ideas? Colleen and Julie would love to hear them. Call 614-349-1661 or visit www.yourfamilydogpodcast.com to share your thoughts.